This is a short extract from The Shapeless Unease, A Year of Not Sleeping by Samantha Harvey, read by Kate at the next chapter. I haven't slept since Sunday night, I say. I say this only after I have managed to dig my head out of my hands where it fell the moment I sat down. I have never cried in front of a doctor before, but there she was, straight-backed, prim and discouraging, and I unslept since Sunday night. Today is Friday. I can think of nothing but sleep. I would kill somebody if it meant I could have theirs. This is a surprise, she said, and I sat and cried. Is it a surprise? I wanted to ask. She meant, you were only here on Monday. With her blessing, I've taken myself off the sedating antidepressants, given that I'm not depressed. Sleep-deprived, desperate, mad, but not depressed. And they're not sedating me anymore. Since then, Monday, I haven't slept. 4 nights in a row without sleep. I have looked on the internet to see if rebound insomnia is an effect of coming off them, which it is. The advice is to do it gradually, not at once. That wasn't her advice. Thus, here I am, once again a child with folded hands. This time, a child in tears. I need some sleeping pills, I say. She stares at me as if my tears have appalled her or somehow confused her. Please, I say. Instantly I regret this because now the power is with her. Now my night's sleep is a favour she can grant. And yet it is. And if it would help to fall at her feet and supplicate myself, I would. Her face is stony, her demeanour sphinx-like. She hands me a prescription of 14 pills. She offers no advice, no support. I take the prescription from her and leave without a word. There's a metaphor I heard a long time ago when I was a philosophy student. An actress is on stage in a theatre when she sees a fire in the wings. She tells the audience there's a fire and that they must get out. The audience thinks this is part of the play and they ignore her instruction. The more animated and urgent she becomes, the more delighted they are by her passionate and brilliant acting. There's nothing she can do to speak beyond her role as an actress. Every attempt only affirms the role. I think this metaphor was part of a feminism course, but its wider resonance has never left me. Its relevance to life often applies. Here and now, in the eyes of the doctor, I am just neurotic and self-obsessed. The more I do to be listened to as a human being, the more I strengthen my role as neurotic and self-obsessed. The less she listens to me, the more I tell or show her that I'm suffering. The more I tell or show her that I'm suffering, the more she thinks I am neurotic and self-obsessed. Each time, my role is reinforced and my role overrides my humanity. I become less human in her eyes. I am a type. I annoy her and waste her time because all I need to do is sleep and I'm cured, whereas she has patients with real illnesses that can't be cured, certainly not with sleep. No part of me wants to go to the doctor. I've come to dread it, to feel in it an absolute humiliation. I see her about insomnia as seldom as I can, and when I go, it is always for something specific, a prescription or, as before, a blood test. I know there's nothing in general a doctor can do. This time, almost 4 months after the last visit, a whole year now of having insomnia, I've come to ask for another blood test, because I've seen a nutritionist who wants to check for any deficiencies, any thyroid problems, anything that might be contributing to my lack of sleep. The nutritionist is surprised that these tests haven't been run before. There's every chance that the tests will find nothing, but at least then I'll know. So I go in. I shake off the supplicant, a business transaction. I won't prevail on her for compassion or for understanding. I'll simply ask her for something practical she can give. I wondered if it would be possible to have another blood test, I say. Everything I read about insomnia says you should rule out any underlying medical cause, and that hasn't been done. I know it's a long shot, but it would help me. Just to eliminate other causes would help me. She turns to her computer and is silent. Finally, without any eye contact, she says, "This is not a shop." I look out of the tall sash window. A heron flaps steadily past above the canal. Rage and exhaustion are much the same sensation, I discover, a flame struggling out of the same dead fire. Anger is alive, energetic, object-orientated, but rage is what's left, eating itself alive. Rage and exhaustion eat me alive. They eat my deference, my past up to this moment, my future beyond this moment, my shoulds and shouldn'ts. Now she is backpedalling, as if she realises she has gone too far. But yes, she says, almost stammers, we'll do the tests. Yes, it's a good idea. Let's do that. As she taps something out on her keyboard, I wonder if I'm in the presence of a maniac. Or am I the maniac? She has me in a game of cat and mouse, and I don't know why. I watch the November sky, heavy and grey, and the pile drivers across the valley where new houses are being built. When I lived over there, people objected to those houses. Not me. I couldn't see the point, since they'd be built anyway. Rage hollows my stomach, like driving too fast over a humpback bridge. Hands on my lap, primly linked, gentle hands. Not elegant, but gentle. A lifetime of courting favours and having manners and asking nicely and never minding if the answer is no.